Thank you. Okay, so this will work now, right? Yeah. Okay, I might need you again because... Oh, no, there it goes. Look at that. So this has been an interesting... We're talking about whole and connected, right? I came with my little laptop with the lightning. Sorry, am I too close to something? With the lightning connector, and it didn't work. And so Janelle Boyer happened to be here. She ran home, got everything that was needed, and it before 6:30, it was all taken care of. So thank you very much. Her own computer, and it just works. Okay, so whole and connected, right? Get the metaphor. creating circles of well-being. So just a preface. I am talking to an audience full of people who know much of this already. So chime in. It's in here, but I just listened to Mary and Brian speaking on conversations on WDRT, and it's a podcast. And I actually cut out a whole chunk of my talk and said, just listen to conversations. Just listen to their talk, because it sums up so well what, a lot of how to be whole and connected, how to connect with other people in respectful ways. So I'll just talk about what, seems relevant. And again, okay, so how do I make this slideshow view? Sorry. There we go. Right? Yeah. Okay. So my lifelong curiosity has been, how can we help each other to remember our wholeness and connectedness to one another and all sentient beings? So I've been asking this question since I was little, wondering why people treated each other badly, why people assumed that animals didn't have emotions, why people were cutting down trees that were really special to me, things like that. I apologize. So it's been a lifelong curiosity, and I've done a lot of things to try to answer those questions, and that's sort of in chronological order. But I'm still doing things to try to figure it out, which is why I call myself a human guinea pig, because it lives in me, partially from trauma, partially from just wanting closer, deeper relationships. And as I look around, I have close, deep relationships with many of the people here, so it's so really gratifying. To have, someone answered that question. And, part of it is just because you're so wonderful. But here we can talk about how we can connect to self energy. But first I want to talk about what might come between us. And this is the ecological model is one name for it, but it's from systems theory, which arose in the 50s. Came up in the 50s and went through just about every area of science there was, and including psychology. And so that's where I learned it, through psychology. But Rachel Carson's Silent Spring is a good example of how we suddenly recognize that things are not isolated. We're all working within systems. So pollution doesn't come from nowhere. It doesn't just appear in the ocean in this dead zone, right? We have to look upstream. And so even for psychological health, we have to look upstream. We have to keep seeing, why is somebody behaving in a certain way? So just thinking about what might come between us as, me and you. Right now, there are certain things in each level of each system that we're embedded in. I can't read this on my screen, so I'm going to just look. So internally, I might not have gotten enough sleep last night, which coincidentally happens to be true. And you might not have eaten dinner to get here on time. So you might be hungry, So we might have some physiological things going on that make us grumpy or a little, sleepy or not very articulate in my case. And we might have some protector energy. So I might look like somebody who was really not very kind to you at one time, and that might put you off of me, And you might be looking at me intently, trying to figure out what I'm saying, and I might take that as judgment or criticism, and I might start to protect myself, right? So those are some of the individual things that could come between us. And then, we've got family values, right? So our families, where we came from, dictate kind of where what we think automatically. Our habitual thinking comes from being embedded in a system of a family, unless we make it conscious to choose some different thoughts, some different beliefs, some different habits. So we might have some legacy burdens, for example, if we come from a culture that I might use a word that's offensive in your culture, or I might accidentally say misgender you, you know, or I might say something else that is offensive in some way, and without even realizing it, that can come between us. In community, there are allegiances that have been created. You know, with this pandemic, of course, as you know, this group was created, I think, in part to combat the hostility that has arisen between groups and in the community. You know, based on what's been happening with the pandemic and then subsequent events. And that's the topic of Mary and Brian's talk on conversations. And then at the level of society, there's the political climate. There are world events happening right now. There's Russia and Ukraine, and that might be actually in the back of our minds. You know, we might be worried about people there. That might be coming between us. It might make us not so present here because we're thinking about world events or we're thinking about climate change. You know, we're thinking, you know, is this our last year on Earth? Who knows? And then there's nature, of course, that surrounds all of us. The weather was a little inclement today, so it might have prevented somebody from coming. It might have prevented, you know, me from going out on my walk, which it did before doing this. And then there's time, and we all have a different relationship with time, but our culture generally has a relationship with time that emphasizes urgency, and that urgency might be coming between us too. Our attention span is part of time too, right? So I'm going to challenge your attention span with the number of slides I have, so I'm going to move on. So then how can we use our strengths working from this hologram together from our places of knowing? So my theory is that each of us has a place where we operate better than another place. So this, and yet, the way we operate in one place is often similar to the way we operate in another place. So if I am uncomfortable with something internally, even if I'm not aware of it, it may reflect out when I start to interact on a societal level, when I try to create social change. My past trauma, for example, might really make me reactive when I'm out in society trying to march, you know, against some sort of social ill. And what I can do about that is find the place where I work the best. So I think even in this room, you know, we have people who work best at the internal level, those of us who are introverts and like to do introspection. And then we have people who really work well at the community level and can make connections there. And we have people who can work at the societal level. And we have people who are really connected to nature. And so I think the strengths that we have in those places, we can actually bring to the other areas in the systems, right? There are so many systems we operate in. And if we're not so great in one, we can take the strengths we have from the other and apply them to the one we are good at. Sorry, I keep doing that. So a systemic view of wholeness says that humans function within a web of relationships. And a systemic view looks at the relationships. So we're looking at, I'm looking at all these experts in systems theory. and this is embarrassing, but please just add to this and correct me if I'm wrong. So humans function within a web of relationships, and all behavior makes sense in context. And if you take nothing else from the talk, all behavior makes sense in context feels like the most important thing that I've learned in recent years. I feel it in my body, and I kind of invite you to feel it in your body too. When I say all behavior makes sense in context, I feel a real relaxation in my whole being from that, because it means that I don't have to accuse anybody of anything. I don't have to say, you know, your beliefs are wrong. I don't have to say, I don't have to get defensive. I can say, I don't understand the context, perhaps, and I probably don't, but I can assume that there's some reason for this behavior that I don't understand or don't agree with. And I can trust that can change, so that it's a dynamic process, right? Well-being is a dynamic process. So I trust that person may change, and that's part of having time out there and as one of the systems. So time can can contribute to our well-being because, you know, this person and I may have huge disagreements, and, you know, 6 years from now, we might actually see eye to eye because we've both gone through growth processes. Or even if we don't see eye to eye, we may be best friends because we don't care about those things, you know, making the center of our being anymore. we can actually accept and respect each other's differences. So what it means to be human is expressed in interaction with our fellow humans, other sentient beings, and the planet on which we live. And there's an implicit focus on developing these capacities. So we have all these capacities, and in systems theory we say we can develop those capacities. We're not stuck, you know, we're not pigeonholed, we're not labeled. We can develop those capacities in all arenas and really invite wholeness to our whole being, you know, and then that will spread. So this holographic idea, if we make ourselves whole, or if we work to make the community whole, or if we work at a societal level, all of those things will reverberate all the way through, you know, up and down, back and forth. So we can work where we're comfortable at first and see how that informs the other systems that we're working in. Okay, so generally, this is what humans want from other humans. Let's be simplistic as possible. I see you. I hear you. I believe you. I value you. You belong. So just take a minute, please, and feel how that feels in your body. I see you. We see you. I hear you. We hear you. I believe you. We believe you. I value you. We value you. You belong. So Maslow had a hierarchy of needs, and his later writings, he wanted to change it to this metaphor of a boat. So I'm sharing it. Some later writers, and I don't know who this is from exactly. Janelle probably knows because she's the one who introduced this to me. Instead of a pyramid that you're climbing and you're working your way to transcendence, it's a dynamic process. So at the bottom is security. And on security, we've got safety, connection, and self-esteem. So that's our boat, and we're on the ocean. And if we're worried, if some of these things are not working very well, if we're not safe, if we don't feel safe, then we're going to be plugging up the holes in the boat. If we've got water coming over the side because our self-esteem is poor, we're going to be dumping water out the boat. You know, we're going to be worried about the boat, and we don't have time to put up the sail. But if all those things, you know, we've got those taken care of, the safety boat, then we can unfurl the sail, and we can work on exploration. And we can let our curiosity take over. We can love. We can accept love. Sorry. And we can find our purpose and enact it. So those things, but this is a dynamic process, and this is why he wanted to change the pyramid, because it's not one and done. You know, you don't climb the pyramid and the pyramid and transcend. It's a dynamic process. You're constantly checking the boat. So everything has changed now after the pandemic, right? So we don't feel as safe, some of us. Some of us don't feel as connected. And some of us have, you know, our self-esteem is impacted by the isolation, for example. So maybe now we're working on plugging up some of those holes, bailing water out over the side, and our sail might not be unfurled. And we just need to be patient with ourselves and others about that, because it's just how it is right now. And we have to trust that it will happen eventually again. You know, if it's not happening, it may be happening in your life. So, you know, more power to you, and please tell us how you did it. But we need to provide the base in order to unfurl our sail. So that would be, in Maslow's view anyway, the order of looking at things. And I think that's relevant because it speaks to attunement, because attunement is, you know, you hear about secure attachment. And attunement is a way to provide secure attachment. So we can do this at any time. And there, you know, you've heard of the studies of the babies and how they work with attunement, trying to get the babies attuned, watching what happens when the mother is not attuned to them. It's not pretty. And when we talk about secure attachment, I like to think about attunement as a whole life process. So we think about it a lot with children. Especially babies. But if we can think of it as a whole life process, and that we can work on our own attunement, we can work on attunement with our intimate partners, we can work on attunement with our families at any time. Again, Mary talks about this in her talk. I'm sorry, Mary. So basically, it's giving the message, you belong to the other person. You belong. And that doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything. It doesn't mean that, you know, there's nothing wrong with me or you, that we don't have work to do for sure. But it does mean that you belong to me and I belong to you. And that's something, Paul, that we said in the wheel, right? You belong to me, I belong to you. And that's forever. We feel that. It's because it's just the truth, right? The biggest organism in the world is a grove of poplar trees in Utah. And they're all connected underneath. They look like individual trees. And this almost makes me cry, but they're all connected underneath the surface by their roots. The largest organism in the world can be seen from space, of course, as so many things can now. So I want to just point out where the little bee is. We sometimes feel like somebody's needs, that we have to meet those needs. And just a note that we don't always have to meet the needs, we just have to hear the needs. You know. And then the attunement has happened once the needs are heard. Meeting them is another step, and that might need to happen too, but the attunement happens at the hearing of it, at the open listening, the sincere caring. What are your needs? So I just want you to pick one of the statements up here, just read some of the statements, and pick one that feels good to you. And just notice how it feels in your body. And just shout out if you have a feeling in your body, in your physical body, how it feels. Do I have to come and kick you? That's not attunement, by the way.
Peaceful.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for you.
How does it feel in your body when if somebody were to say that to you, how does that feel?
Oh, it tingles all over.
All over, yeah. Warm. Where does it feel warm? In your heart. Yeah, me too. That's how I feel too.
Fullness.
Yeah, fullness. Yeah, I feel that here. Yeah, yeah, a little tearing up, maybe. Yeah. I trust you. Yeah, think about what it's like to have somebody say, I trust you. What does that say about you, that somebody trusts you? Beautiful. Yeah, so that's how belonging feels. And we can do that for each other. We can do that for ourselves. I just want to mention here, I'm going to have another slide that talks about this too, but the window of tolerance is a useful construct. It's a little not my style, but it's also, it can be useful. So the window of tolerance just says, in this middle part, I'm calm and relaxed and ready for action. I feel secure. It's that bottom of the boat. My self-esteem is fine. I'm ready to connect with you. You know, that's where the window of tolerance is. When something happens and we get into fight or flight, that can send us either up into hyperarousal, that will send us into hyperarousal, or we can go into freeze, and that will send us into hypoarousal. So lack of attunement will do one of those things. So if we feel misattuned, then we can go up into hyperarousal, and we can start to get anxious and defensive. And we can say, I don't want to talk to you anymore. When, of course, all I want is to connect with you, right? But I don't want to talk to you anymore is a hyperarousal response, because it's a protective part moving away from that misattunement. I can't handle the misattunement. It's too much for my system. And that's what hyperarousal is. I'm overloaded. And so I'm defensive, I'm angry or anxious. And I don't have access to all those the calm feelings. I can't learn. You know, you can't learn when you're in hyperarousal because you're in fight-flight mode. Bless you. And then hypoarousal is when your energy drops. So it's the same in that, you know, it can happen with a misattunement. It can happen when you're afraid. You know, when you're in a situation where you don't know what's going to happen or there's a shock, you can go into hypoarousal, which is kind of a deadening of the emotions. So you've got extreme emotions with hyperarousal, and you've got a deadening of the emotions in hypoarousal. And misattunement can go either way, can make you go either way. So you can, well, we'll talk about that later. So here's some examples of attunement and misattunement. I'm going to go, I've got too many of these, I will confess. But I wanted to do one for each of the of the arenas, right? That was my plan, but we have, Steve and I have decided that there are too many. So I'm just going to do a few. So a sleeping baby startles awake and cries, and the caregiver is cooking dinner, so they decide to let the baby cry and finish dinner. So this is not a malicious act, right? The caregiver is not a bad person. They're not evil in any way. They're trying to take care of their family in some way. But the infant experiences this as a misattunement. And so initially they'll go into hyperarousal potentially because and maybe start screaming because they need to get their needs met. And that's what babies do when they need to get their needs met and they're not met. So the example on the... and that also... when we talk about misattunement, that will put somebody into their sympathetic nervous system. So sympathetic is when you go into hyperarousal, and that is the fight or flight. And if you're in the parasympathetic, that's the rest and digest, where you're free and easy. You know, you can digest information, you can digest food. So when the caregiver comes and picks the baby up and soothes the baby, especially if they do it pretty quickly before they move into hyperarousal, then the baby is soothed, they go into parasympathetic, they might eat and be able to digest, and the harmony is restored. So that's what we're looking for, and it can happen in not just infant parent, but I've got a little boy, Michael. So this would be, that would be in a home setting. Here's a school setting where Michael makes something out of... By the way, most of these are examples that I experienced. So I'm Michael in this case, and he made something out of twine and sticks and show it to the teacher and say, "Hey, I made this." And another child says, "Well, what did Michael make?" And the teacher says, "I have no idea." So that would be misattunement, right, to both children, both of the children who were asking. And the child who asked will probably immediately pick up on the teacher's tone and direct that also at Michael. So the child has to then attune to the teacher, you know, because they want that attunement. And Michael is then left out in the cold because the other child has attuned to the teacher. Yeah. Sorry, I did it again. So then in the other example, Michael brings the sticks and twine, and the kid says, "What is that?" And the teacher says, "Well, let's let Michael explain it, and you know, can put it on the let's put it on the desk." And so then the child who asked is learning, you know, this subtlety of I have no idea what this is, but I want Michael to explain it. You know, so I'm giving the power back to Michael, and Michael can explain it. And what a beautiful gesture! And so this other child is learning that the beautiful gesture there too. So. So that's an example of attunement. And she did two in one. She attuned to both kids at one time, so good for her. So, and then that attunement helps you relax. You know, it just helps you relax and be able to learn. So think about, for yourself, in school as a child, the examples of misattunement, the examples of attunement, and think, how did that relate to how well you were able to learn? You know, did it? Do you think there was a correlation? I think there might have been. Yeah, so interesting. So then here's a teenage girl wanting to go out on a date. She's nervous. Her dad, you know, comes over and says, "You know, if you want my advice, don't eat too much at dinner because he might worry that you're going to get fat." So how is that? He might be joking, and, you know, that might go over fine with her. But there's some part of her that's going to worry about it, right? There's some part of her that gets the message, "I'm not okay, and I've got to watch myself. I've got to maybe somehow make sure that I'm not too anything." But then if he just goes over and says, "What's going on?" You know, then that would be an attunement because he's asking her. That you, again, you don't have to meet the need. You just have to ask the question and be sincere in the asking. So there's more. There's one about a department head telling his employee that he couldn't hear what she was saying because of her eyes. And then, you know, on the opposite side, it would be, you know, let me ask a question about how you think this new thing will improve morale. And again, activating the attunement, the sympathetic, the misattunement, and the sympathetic, or the attunement and the parasympathetic. So then we've got a husband and a wife. And the wife says, I don't have time. You'll do fine. Or she says, okay, I'm going to finish my project. So she's not giving up her needs, right? She's not saying, oh, I'll drop everything right this second because that's what you want. She's saying, give me a few minutes while I'm doing that. Maybe write out some questions, and then we'll do a mock interview, right? So that's important too. So then even like with a horse. So somebody is saying, you know, somebody maybe has in their head, horses need me to be confident. Horses can smell fear. So they walk up to the horse really confidently. And anybody who's been around horses knows that if you wait, you know, you take a step forward and you wait for the horse to put its head down, and that's an indication that the horse is ready for you to approach it. So if you don't know that, you're not maliciously going into the horse, but it's still a misattunement, and you'll see the horse's head go like that, meaning stay the fuck, oh, sorry, stay. Moving on. I'm being recorded. Okay. So even in the political arena, right? Like a political candidate can make a speech saying, here's what you need to do, or he can tell a story. Telling a story puts everyone into a relaxed mode and says, okay, I'm ready to listen to you. Sorry, I just put this in a joke, as a joke, but a woman flubs a public speaking engagement. On the way home, she berates herself. So I put this in also because it shows how we can do this internally, too, and that's the rest of the talk, really, is about how we do this internally to ourselves. So I can attune to my own parts, or I can misattune to my own parts. So if I were to berate myself on the way home and say, God, I should have prepared better, then I'm misattuning with myself, and I will go into fight flight, or at least be agitated and go to bed mad and probably get another bad night's sleep. Or I can allow my feelings, I can have compassion for myself, and that will attune with that part, and then the stress can release, and I can then go digest a snack. So the idea here is to connect first with whether, so there are all these arenas, right? So whether we're talking about somebody meditating, they're connecting first with themselves before they start their day. They're making some sort of connection to themselves or their higher power, whatever it is. Then there's a woman here connecting with nature, feeling the sun on her face. It does not take long, right? But it can change your whole day, your whole week by just doing that one morning. Then you see at the top left that the students are really connected to this teacher. You know, they're really engaged. So the teacher has probably told a joke at the beginning of class, and they're really receptive. And so they've relaxed, and they're ready to learn. Their frontal lobe is online. And then there's a concert below that, and you know they're rocking out because they feel connected to the music. The performer has in some way shared his or her heart with the audience, and they're right there with them. So and then down at the bottom left is the young man in a parade, and he's connecting, right? Like he's got this humor and this kind of magic about him, and he's connecting with the people watching the parade, I'm assuming, so that they'll understand his perspective a little bit better and maybe make a connection instead of just, you know, pounding on the cognitive issues. And then there's a boy and his son. So you can imagine this boy and his son will eventually, if they need to have a harder conversation, since they've had these fishing trips together, they're going to have a nice, decent conversation because there's that connection that they've had first. They've built on it. And then the mom and the child, you can imagine. Most kids hate to brush their teeth, or many kids do. And this mom has said, I'll brush with you. Let me do it with you. And that's a way of attuning. You know, I'll do it with you, we'll do it at the same time, and I'll be touching you while you're doing it, and we're going to have fun. So that's a way of attuning. So this is the part where I just have listen to conversations, WDRT, the March 31st podcast, because there's so much there that I just had to delete because of time, and really they cover it so well. So they talk about Otto Scharmer and Theory U and all these other people that I was going to put in here that I just took out. But what I want to point out that might be a little bit different and maybe taking the baton is connecting protective parts to self energy. So to introduce that, I just want to say my favorite bumper sticker has been always, don't believe everything you think, right? And so I just want you to look at the statements here and see if you can find anything that you have heard from someone else before or that you yourself have maybe said or thought and believed it was true. And if it's somebody else, something that they really believed was the absolute ultimate truth. Did anybody find one?
Just
one. Yeah. Yeah, so I remember being told, I'm going to just choose that renewable energy can't come close to meeting demand. You know, that was being said in, what, the 80s maybe. And I was so skeptical of that. I thought, why not? If we, you know, if we're getting all this oil to do it, why can't we figure out how to make enough solar panels, you know, at the time? And it was propaganda, right? Like, it wasn't the truth. It was just a way of saying, we don't want to do it. We don't want to invest our time here. So, but the point is that it can happen in all levels of these systems, right? We can do it to ourselves, saying, I'm just not creative. We can say it on a societal level. It's inevitable. We're going to all, you know, fry in any minute now. It can be on a community level. They would agree if they knew the facts. It can be on a societal level, saying those people aren't like us. We're different. They don't have the same feelings. I used to train teachers, and one of the things I often heard in parent-teacher collaboration, and one of the things I often heard from the teachers was, "You've not seen our parents. They don't care about their kids." Every single time I did the training, I would hear that, and I just couldn't fathom it, you know, but. They really believed that. They believed it was true. And, you know, they had their reasons, and usually it was a cultural difference. And then, you know, the pain is just part of getting old, really relates to the talks that we've had here, right? So I will say I've learned, oh, thank you, I've learned, geez, some from other people here, you know, we don't have to, our bodies can sustain us in such beautiful ways, you know, we just have to keep it up, keep up the adjustments. Among other things. So protectors, in case you're not familiar with internal family systems theory, protectors are parts that a person has developed through life to protect them when something bad happens. So we are meant to attune with our caregivers. And if our caregivers don't attune to us, we will attune to them. So often our protectors are created out of that process. So if I get a scowl from my parent, when I'm playing in the mud. They don't like that. I have this silent, okay, don't play in the mud. You know, remember Groundhog Day where he's cataloging what she wants? Oh, no chocolate ice cream. You know, that's the kind of thing we do, right, as children. No playing in the mud. That's going to get me dirty, and they don't like dirty. No dirty. Okay, no dirty. If it happens enough times that I get dirty, a protective part comes up and starts to berate me when I lean toward the mud pies, you know, and it says, no, don't do that. You're going to get the look, and that's a misattunement. We don't want that. I want to be attuned, so I'm going to stay clean. You know, that's a protective part. There's nothing bad about it. It's useful. The way protective parts are made mostly is through intermittent reinforcement. That's the strongest way of reinforcing something, is intermittently. So it will not work every time. It will only work some of the time, which is maddening, of course, for all of us, because we want things that will work all the time, and nothing does. So our parts form and say, I'm at a loss, I don't know what's going to work every time, but I'm going to try this because it seems to work the majority of the time. Okay? They don't actually ask okay, because they just assume it's okay. Because that attunement is our sole goal and our most important, the most important thing that we need. So the protective parts are created for that reason. And, you know, usually they're created at such young ages, and in IFS, they believe that they stay at those ages. So our protective parts are 5 years old or 3 years old or, you know, maybe 7, maybe 11. So they're young, but they're fierce. That's the other thing. They believe so strongly that this is the only way that we're going to survive, because misattunement to a child feels like potential death. Because what happens if our parents don't like us anymore? they might desert us, and we're left without anybody. So it's really, really important to attune, and our protective parts feel and act like it is life or death. So many of you know that I like the Enneagram, so I just inserted this in here. But just as a way of looking at some protective strategies, I'm not going to go into the Enneagram, but we can look at some protective strategies. So some people, we also aren't going to, we're not going to say we only use one of these things. So I'm a type one, but I don't just strive. I do a lot of these protective strategies, right? So let's look at them. Striving to make things function at their best. So a protector can be a striver. You know, I have a really strong inner striver. But my protector isn't just a striver. My protector is a striver. Right? Like, this is the energy of my inner protector. Because that's the only strategy it thinks will work. So it gets very manic and insistent. So see, as we go around, if you have any of those that like, you, extending to make life better for others, right? Or you can extend to make life better for others, and they better do it, right? Or, you know, you can organize to achieve results. You can be a leader. Or you can organize them, right? So you can express feelings and experiences authentically. You can analyze to understand how things or people really work. It's another strategy. You can start anticipating to preserve what's important to you. You can engage in positive possibilities to emphasize pleasure in life. Why not? You can direct action to maximize strength. You can accept what is to preserve harmony. As you'll see, these all sound pretty great. And if taken to an extreme, they can be not so great. You know, constant harmony at the expense of your own inner peace isn't great. Anticipating to preserve what's important keeps you in the future all the time if you're doing it constantly, for example. So here's a kind of a typical pattern that we do in all of these. So when we're thinking about this is a typical thing we would do with a couple in marriage, in a couples therapy session, is we chart out, you know, what happens, and we put it in a circle to point out that there's no person who starts the argument. The arguments are circular and they're continuous. And you know, one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. It's a circle. It's not a line of causality. So the learned patterns are: a part perceives an injury based on past experience. So let's think of a dog. Like, I have my walking buddy is here. So we're walking along the road, and a dog starts barking. And a part of me has been bitten by a dog on that road in the past, so I might start to get alert, right? So this is an innocuous example, but you can imagine, like, it could be, another example would be if my husband Steve were to leave the butter out on the counter, you know, in this little, open the wrapper, get some stuff out for his toast, and then leave the butter on the, I'm not raw foodist anymore, by the way, leave the butter out on the counter. So that might happen. And I might, I actually wouldn't do this, but I might start to say, I'm worried about getting sick, right? Like some little part of me might say, I don't want microbes, and I don't want the cat getting up, jumping up on the counter and licking the butter. This is really gross. I think it's really, so that part of me might, a worried part might. So those are the two examples I'm going to use. So then the next thing is a protective part wants to defend this vulnerable part. So my protector starts to rise up. So it's not necessarily really angry in the beginning. It just feels like it needs to, you know, just to be present, right? Like, I'm here. So I'm here. I got your back. So the vulnerable part is there, right? Like, I'm worried about getting sick, or I'm worried about getting bitten. And then the next thing, the protector comes up and says, I need you to not do that. So I'm looking at the dog saying, you go home. You go home. And or I look at my husband and say, could you, I might have a little edge. Could you not leave the butter on the counter? Little edge. And then anything that comes back at me, I will take, my protective part will take as proof that this is happening, that this is bad, right? So it's going to escalate. So if the dog that I just told to go home doesn't understand me for some reason and barks again, my protector is going to say, this is a bad dog. This is a bad dog. He's going to bite me. Or my poor husband might say, it's okay to leave the butter on the counter. It doesn't hurt you to have, you know, there's no microbe that's going to kill you if you eat butter that's been on the counter. I am immediately assuming, if my protective part is that active, I'm immediately assuming that he's trying to kill me. You know, that he doesn't care about, you don't even care about my health, do you? You don't even care if I die of butter poisoning. So, right, my protector is going to escalate, or that dog, Gene, get that dog away from me. I'm going to get bitten again. Right, so then my protector is interpreting things the way that it thinks is protective. It's not true, right? Back to don't believe everything you think. Don't believe everything your protectors think. And I can't read that. So then the protective part moves into proving mode. Well, the butter thing, you know what you did before? You also left the jam out on the counter. And I think you were leaving that for me. You're gonna make me a snack with the jam that had been out for like a day. And I think there was mayonnaise out. I think it was out for like 16 minutes out on the counter. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm gonna start to prove my point. And the dog is getting closer and the owner is far away. The owner, he is not taking care of his dog. He's gonna let that dog bite me. So right, those kinds of things can just escalate. And then everything shuts down. So when the system becomes overwhelmed, there's no way to learn, right? So we go into fight, flight, or hypoarousal, and we stop being able to learn, we stop being able to communicate. So then the Gottmans, some family marriage therapists, would say, go take a 20-minute break because you're too aroused. Your frontal lobe can't function. So you're in either fight, flight, or freeze, and you have to go take a break. 20 minutes, you can get your physiology back in line, calmed down, and then you might be able to have a conversation again. But you need to wait those 20 minutes. But that's the learned pattern, an example of one anyway. So then with IFS, we talk about self-energy. So self, it's a little bit difficult to explain, a little esoteric, but we could call it the higher self. We could call it your higher power or your connection to your higher power. You could call it your Buddha nature. You're connected to self, your God self, the egoless self, even call self, you could call self no self, and that would paradoxically mean the same thing, or something very similar. Or our essential nature, I kind of like that one, our essential nature. But the qualities are, this is always available, this is who we are, this is us in our wholeness. It is the part of us, or it's not a part, it's the wholeness, and so it's attuned to all of us. To all of you, you know, all of the other people, all of nature, all sentient beings, it's attuned to each part of ourselves. And it's the only thing that we can control that affects real change. And by control, I don't mean controlling self, but I mean we can control when we can have access to self. We can fundamentally change our practices so that we can have more access to this wholeness that we have innately in us. So the qualities of self are easy to remember, sort of, because they're all C's and P's. So basically, all the wonderful things that you would like somebody to be attuned with you with, compassion and caring and clarity and confidence, courageousness, curiosity, and the P's would be playful and persistent and patient, and also able to change one's perspective. That's another thing you talked about. So all of these things are indications that we're in self, right? So self-energy is kind of what we're not actually in IFS. They say don't try to be in self all the time. Don't go for enlightenment. We're not meant to do that. What we're meant to do is to connect self-energy to our parts and to connect self-energy to other people's parts and connect self-energy to other people's self-energy, because then that's all that same energy, and the energy just vibrates out in that case. So this is the difference that self-energy makes in a cycle like this, right? So I can intervene with my protective parts in this same cycle with the dog or with, I don't know how I came up with this example about the butter, but anyway, it's there, so I have to continue. But recognizing the part's perspective. So first of all, when I have this hurt feeling, you know, or this worry, I can connect to that part right away. I can say, okay, I recognize that perspective. I recognize it. I see you, right? I see you. I hear you. And I believe you that you think that the butter is going to kill you, you know, or you think the butter is dangerous at this stage. I believe you. I'm not going to say I believe that the butter is dangerous. I'm going to say I believe that you feel that it's dangerous. That's a difference, a huge difference. And we can do that with one another too. You know, Steve could say, okay, I hear that part. So in a dialogue, we can say, I hear what you're saying, and I have such compassion for what you're feeling. And I want to hear more about it. I'm not saying I believe it. I'm not saying I believe that butter sitting on the counter is a bad thing. Jean could say, yeah, I remember when that dog came and just bit your leg. You know, that was like, no wonder you're feeling that. And immediately, in either case, my system calms down, right? Because I've been seen, heard, believed. So that's basically all of these. I don't want to belabor the point, but all of those qualities, if we use them in interactions with our parts and use them in interactions with one another, it can calm the situation down. We can actually find a way to show respect to one another without all of the need, you know, that we have to agree on something. So self-energy is willing to step back. So, you know, the analogy is of driving the bus. So self-energy can be driving the bus, and a part can rush up from the back of the bus and say, move over, I've got to drive because, you know, there's this barking dog or the butter's on the counter, and I've got to drive because you're not doing anything about it. And so the part will take the wheel. Self will step back and let the part take the wheel because self doesn't have a need for things to be any particular way. Self is this kind and gentle force. So it will allow the part to take over. But if we start to recognize in our system that we want self to be present more often, we want self to be taking the wheel more often, then we need to figure out how to, I'm going to skip that one, how to cultivate that. So we need consistent practices on the one hand, and we need in-the-moment strategies on the other hand. So this is, I'm preaching to the choir here for these. I understand that. So I won't spend too much time on it, but those are the two arms, right? So many of us will do one, but not the other. So we'll have a consistent practice of meditation and yoga in the mornings, and then, you know, and then go about our day, and then something will send us through the roof. And even though we've expanded our window of tolerance by doing meditation and yoga every single day, we're not necessarily practicing the in-the-moment strategies to bring that, bring ourselves back into the window of tolerance. Or the opposite, right? Like we want to try to find those quick fixes that will help us not be reactive to our spouse or to our child, but we don't have the consistency of the practice that will widen the window of tolerance, you know, over time. So this is just an illustration that moments in self lead to better access to self because it becomes familiar to us. We recognize it. Oh, this is what it's like to be in self. And there are so many ways. This is the fun part, okay? So there are so many ways to access self-energy. You know, I do like meditation and yoga, but that is so not the only way. We could spend hours on each of these boxes because, and there's so much more. I just had to fit it in the template, you know, fit things in the template, but there's so many more ways. So, you know, anything. So there's touch, and I include movement in touch because somatic movement is such an important part of, such an important and useful way to connect with our self-energy. So, you know, you can do free dance to music that mirrors your emotions or to music that makes you feel the way you want to feel, and that will help you get into self-energy. Or you can make a cat purr, and so then you're attuning to the cat, and it starts, you know, you make it purr, and you feel, you know, some self-energy arise because you're connecting with the cat. Or you can walk barefoot in the grass. So, you know, I'm just going to pick out one from each of the columns now. So with imagination, one of the things in the modality EMDR is that we can imagine a satisfying solution to a traumatic event. So if something bad happened, we can change the ending, which I've had that done by somebody right here, to me personally. So we can actually have change the event in our imagination, which our feeling world can't tell the difference between imagination and reality. So when we feel when we imagine a new solution or a new resolution to this event. So, you know, somebody broke my heart, and I can and I was a blubbering mess, and I can go back and imagine myself handling it gracefully and not, you know, blowing my nose all over his coat. You know, maybe that would that would make me feel a little bit more graceful and less awkward. So we can use our imaginations, and I put that under sight because it is a sight. It is a way of seeing. Hearing, nature sounds, bird song actually evolutionarily has been a trigger for our relaxation response because birds will stop making noise when there's a predator around, and they will start again when it's safe. So we know that on our cellular level. And so when we hear birdsong, we feel relaxed. So, and you know, even fake birds, like even birds in our headphones. So, you know, smelling, I'm an essential oil fan, but also just going on a walk in the forest, smelling the pine, or I don't know, do birches smell? I guess they do. There's an essential oil for birch. And then with nutrition, or tasting. I love the Sikh tradition of sharing prasad, which is something sweet after the chanting. They do the chanting and then they share the prasad, which is remembering the sweetness of life, which gives me an excuse to eat cake on occasion. But this is the part that I find most exciting, right? So those are there are lots and lots of ways to connect with self through the senses, but there's also ways to connect with self through our already connected parts. So we all have ways of connecting with self that are our natural tendencies, our natural propensities. And I think mine usually is curiosity, right? So all of these qualities, these self qualities, just look at the list and see if you can find one that you resonate with. Like, oh yeah, I do that a lot. Like I see those of you who have, you know, amazing amounts of compassion. I went and got adjusted the other day and cried because of the compassion I felt, and you know, just amazing. Confidence, you know, there are people who have this confidence and walk in a room, and it's uplifting because you feel that, and it's so inspiring, right? It's uplifting right away. So look at these and see playful. that's a good one. Being present. I can just see it in each and one of you. I could just point to some some of these things and point to the person that has it. And so that's the exciting part, is that we can then find that entryway to self. So if I can let myself get curious about something and go explore and find out what the next thing is, okay, so let me learn. I've learned about juicing. Now let me learn about eating venison. I don't know. What it might be, but I can get curious. If I can get curious, that can lead me into these other aspects of self. So if I can get playful, right? If I have a child, thank you. If I have a child living with me and I can play with the child, then that can lead me into the other aspects of self. And so if I'm feeling myself weighed down, getting into maybe hypoarousal, feeling that kind of leaden feeling of I don't care anymore, I can choose one of these things. You know, I can choose to be curious about something, or I can choose to play, or I can just choose to go out on a walk. You know, I can choose to engage with myself in a way that embraces one of those qualities, the one that I have most access to, and then it leads me to the others. I think that's really, really exciting. So what are your strategies? If you don't mind shouting out, what are your strategies to access self-energy? And I know self-energy might be a new term for some of you, but like, what makes you at your best? What is something you can do, like fishing maybe, that can bring you to your best self, right? What's something?
Service.
Service, yes. Service, right, exactly. And then that's on that larger level. Yeah, service, absolutely. So we're not so withdrawn and thinking about our own stuff. If we do service for somebody else, yeah. What else?
Walking in the grass.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so that connection with nature. And so what does that do for you?
Grounding.
Yeah. Grounded. Yeah, okay, so it brings you back in from the manic, yeah. You know, and it brings you back down to who you are. Yeah, nice.
Humor,
yes. Playfulness, humor, yes. That's great. Yeah, that's true. I've seen that happen.
Dancing.
Hmm? Dancing, yes, absolutely. So the somatic part, right? Like letting our bodies express the self energy in there. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That can do it for me every time too. Nice. Thank you. So then there are also these cognitive ways, and I'm not going to go into these, but I just wanted to mention some of them. Looking at things through the generations can be a way of cognitively understanding self-energy, right? So looking at legacy burdens and doing ancestral healing or, you know, participating in family constellations, those are some fun and interesting things to do that can connect us to the self-energy of people in the past, you know, and bring that forward and recognize that we have all these people behind us supporting us. And then there's this, some, you know, spiritual paths, prayer, I didn't put here for some reason, but I should have. And then self in relation to the larger, which is service work, is a good way to see that. Personality, you've got the Enneagram and Myers-Briggs, but then also Ayurveda, of course. It's more than personality, but I didn't have the correct category. Maybe should have put it in spiritual, but it's looking at the whole self, you know, all the things. So Ayurveda is a really comprehensive one. And then the developmental piece, right? Like how are we developing as humanity, and how are we as individuals placing ourselves in that larger story? That the eco-soul wheel, that's Bill Plotkin, that's a useful thing to look at for that reason. And then of course, it's a hero's journey, and we can place ourselves in there. Where are we? I had somebody recently tell me that in the metamorphic phases, I'm goo. So I appreciated that. I appreciated knowing that, I think. But it's true, right? Like we learn new things, we develop, and then we turn to goo, and then we grow wings again, and then we collapse again and turn to goo, and then we renew again, and that's kind of the cycle. So I guess I'm grateful to be goo. Okay, so here's the process, and this is it, right? This is all we'll say. But the process of connecting self to parts, according to IFS, is you become aware of a part. You notice the emotions, sensations, and images and thoughts that belong to this part. So we don't usually say that a part has only one emotion. We think of a part as multifaceted, as its own little person. And you just let that part expand. You ask, how do I feel toward this part? How do I feel toward this part? I should have used the word toward. If you feel anything but those self qualities, so when you think of this part that doesn't like butter on the counter, or the part that's afraid of the dog, how do I feel toward this part? If I feel kind of derisive toward the part, that's another part. Because self doesn't ever feel anything but compassion and curiosity and clarity and all those other words, playfulness. So if you feel anything else, you find that part. You know, the part that's feeling derisive. I can work with that part and say, I want to know you better too. Because I do. Sincerely, self does. And so when the answer is a self quality, then I can work with the part that I originally went to work toward, work with. So the better part. and then you get curious about what the part wants and needs. Oh, perfect. And what it feels its job is. What does this part want and need? And what does it feel its job is? And you can even ask it how old it is if you want to. You know, you can just start to explore, get curious about it. What do you really want, and what do you really need? And then you befriend the part and say, thank you so much. Because I know, you know, I may sometimes, there are other parts of me that may sometimes get down on you because you have this strategy that can get me into trouble. But I actually really appreciate what you've done for me. And I know from whence you came. And I know what you've been through. And I respect that. I see you. I hear you. I know you. I believe you. And I value you. So this is a little bit of a different turn, left turn maybe in psychology. We're not trying to get rid of parts. We're not trying to get rid of them. We're not trying to say, go away, go away, go away, sadness. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to say, tell me more. And now think about that in relation to other people. Tell me more. Not go away. Tell me more. I want to know you. I value you. I want to hear about your experience. I want to know how you came to where you are. So then, we've got the practices that lead us to self-energy. And then we've got these in-the-moment emergency sniff some essential oils to get me back to groundedness, walk on the grass, call a friend. We've got those to create healthy relationships. in all of these places, right? Internally, with our family members in the community. And that affects the larger society, but we can directly affect the larger society with self-energy. The more we have, the more we can affect it. It's universal. We become like those poplars in Utah. You know, we're connected underneath. And when we, as little trees, you know, connect with our self-energy, so much more powerful, right? So, of course, don't ask what the world needs. Ask, Jean introduced me to this quote, ask what makes you come alive and do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive, and our self-energy is what enlivens us. So, I mean, we could look at each one of these levels and say, now, what connects us here? What comes between us? Yes. But really, what connects us, and what connects us is this self-energy, this caring, this beautiful kindness that we all have and we all know we have. And so, I guess that's all. We're just trying to connect, right? So thanks for listening. Yeah.